Don't force relevant. If the only relevant pictures that you can come up with are boring and dull, then go with something exciting and visually appealing.
All right, it's time for another episode of Grow the Dream. Today,
Facebook is launching an app that allows lead generation ads with pre-filled forms.
An epic fail of a live ad read on our show.
We dissect 48 Facebook ad tests to see whether you're following good advice or not.
And Ron tears the thing apart.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the most indispensable show for people doing the hard work of growing your business. It's the marketing podcast by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. Welcome to Grow the Dream.
All right, welcome to episode 65 of...
Hey, what's the name of our show? We're getting old.
It's the Grow the Dream Show.
That's the best I got, man.
I'm so excited. Rod, I'm so proud of you right now.
I can sing.
Yeah, and that's right. That put you on the spot, David. You said I had to do it first, so.
Rod, you are my man today.
It's Rod's Ringles.
Rod's Ringles. I'm sure we can find a different word than jingles.
Josh's Jingles. Okay, just, all right, so if you're watching the video, clearly I am not there.
So everything's breaking down.
It's kind of funny to be trying to host the show from another state. It's just an interesting thing. So yeah.
This is comical to me.
Yeah. So what you guys are doing a repeat brew of the day up there, right?
Yeah, we are. It's the same brew as we've been doing.
What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Melitta. Like pre-ground store-bought grocery coffee.
It's okay.
Ouch. Yeah.
Which we have a solution for that coming up, which we'll get to.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Point. Yeah. So, how you guys doing? I I'm out of town. I'm traveling, you know. So
yeah, you're pretty disconnected.
I haven't seen you guys. It's different.
It's okay. You like you said, you have the face for radio.
Now we're rocking and rolling down here in the home base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on though in the news?
Well, I got one thing in the news that I think you guys might have more input on than I do, maybe. But I found it interesting. Facebook is launching an app that. It's allowing lead generation ads with forms that are pre-filled out based on, you know, Facebook preferences of the target that you're looking at.
Okay, this like happened before F8.
Well, I don't know. They're plugging it now. They're pushing it now. It just popped up on my radar now.
Okay, by plugging it now, what news?
Yeah, no, actually, I'm through Facebook here. But what I wanted to know was, have you used it? Do you know if it's effective? And I mean, does this make sense to either of you guys? To me, the automatic fill-in, the whenever you can make things super easy and clean for a potential customer, that seems like a good thing.
Nah, it looks like an ad then.
Well, I haven't seen this on Facebook. I mean, I've seen lead ads before, but I've not seen the pre-filled version. But here's what's interesting is that we've used pre-filled lead gen forms
on Twitter,
off of Facebook.
Oh.
Yeah, so like for example, with AWeber, you guys remember a few weeks back we had Tom from AWeber on the show.
Yeah, that was a while ago, I think.
Yeah, but they've had a lead tool for a while that you can use, and you can just pop it onto your website. And if you tell it to use Facebook, what it'll do is when the customer or your prospect sees the form, it's a Facebook thing, and it's already got their email address and their first and last name and whatever else you've requested. Now you don't have it yet until they hit the button.
Right, until they say sign up with Oh, I see what you're saying. But it's preformed from their perspective.
But it's pre-filled with all their, because they're logged into Facebook already in some other tab on their, you know, in their browser.
Okay,
so.
but this is obviously very different. You've seen the Twitter's implementation of this.
Yeah, I have, and I've seen Facebook lead ads before, but not the pre-filled ones. So this will be interesting.
So does AWeber's are they drawing from your preferences on Facebook?
Well, yeah, it is driven by preferences in that if you, as a Facebook user, have set your privacy settings in a very restrictive way, then the form will not be pre-filled. So,
okay.
I really don't know what to look at. When you're talking, I'm so used to looking at you.
That's funny because we're at the bad angles. So Josh has to crank his neck over, look at me, and he doesn't really want to anyway.
Well, you're not talking. So like when David, when you're talking, I'm like looking around. I find myself actually looking at the camera for the first time.
You know, since I sit in the middle, I realize I actually don't usually look at either of you.
Yeah, so Rod is usually staring at his computer screen.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here's my thoughts on this. I don't think it's the first thing we should jump all over, these lead things. I'd rather see somebody else test it. Right now, the hot thing on basically every ad platform I care about right now is video. And that's what I'm my focus and my interest is on right now.
Okay, so that's a different topic, but sure.
What's a different topic? We're talking about ads that convert, and the only reason I'm going to do a lead ad is if it converts better than another ad. And the ads that are converting right now, getting the best quality score, the best cost per click, are video ads.
Hey, and our show last week, you know, proved it. I don't think we ever got down to the numbers. We're paying less than 2 cents per view on those Facebook
for the Brushy Bear thing,
for Brushy Bear videos. Less than 2 cents.
And then how do you measure
conversion? I'm sorry. Less than 0.2 cents.
Okay. All right.
Whoa. All right,
because that's a lot of views, I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. It's less than 2 cents of a penny per view.
Yeah, and the other question you never answered last week was the organic versus paid reach.
Yeah, it's if you're just looking at reach numbers, you know what? I don't have it in front of me at the moment. But like we talked about how many views that video has last week. The reach is much closer to 1 million. So the reach versus the views is kind of an interesting dynamic there, because we're still getting branding on the views. Sure. I mean, on the reach reach, right? Because it mentions Tongue, and so anyway, this is
an interesting news segment.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about this much more. We need to give you talked about a little background on Brushy Bear and Tongue Brush, because
I don't know. They can just go back and listen to the rest of it. You walked into Hornet's Nest with this a lead thing. It
doesn't really feel like a Hornet's Nest to me.
Yeah, it is.
speaking of video, did you guys see this last week? Comcast bought DreamWorks.
Yes.
The animation studio was purchased by Comcast.
Right.
That'd be so, like Microsoft buying Apple.
Because one's it's multi.
No, not in the vertical sense, but in the like brand perception.
Yeah, I feel like people love to hate Comcast and they love to love DreamWorks.
It's exactly right. Yes.
Yeah. And okay.
People
that makes
love
sense
to hate Microsoft and they love to love Apple, unless you're
Any cable provider is loved to be hated.
Yeah. I actually like my Verizon. They're actually pretty legit. Okay. Of course, now it's not Verizon. What the heck happened there?
So this is going to be interesting, because it seems like they're really – Comcast is now saying, hey, Disney, we're coming after you.
Yeah.
I don't – What else does Comcast own? I guess I don't fully understand.
Do they have Time Warner still and stuff?
They own NBC and they own Universal.
Right, I mean, so they're a conglomerate. They're not just a cable company by a long shot.
This is like when AOL bought Time Warner, right? You know, it's like it's a little bit. Although,
which
although
didn't
AOL,
actually go that
AOL
well.
AOL was kind of an upstart at the time. Still, I mean,
oh my gosh! So you've got tech companies getting into to media and into stories. You've got media companies like Disney getting into tech.
Yeah.
And then you've got Google that's like doesn't know what it is. I'm sorry. Google knows what it is. Alphabet is everything.
Well, it's just fascinating to me, because I think it speaks to the future of media. And of course animation too, but anyway. I was just very fascinated by that. I'm shocked that Jeffrey Katzenberg and Spielberg and David Geffen would sell. That's one sort of shocking thing. Like, why would you ever sell DreamWorks? But they did. So, hey, in other news, iTunes.
Woo. Okay,
iTunes turned 13. Did you see this?
Okay.
The iTunes Store turned 13 last week.
It's time for a rebrand.
Quartz ran a story that basically the headline was, iTunes turned 13 and it's still awful.
That's a good headline.
It's like LinkedIn. I still don't understand. I mean, their profits were up, I think, 5%. I'm like, I feel like that is the most least innovated tool. Every time I go in there, I'm like, you still haven't updated this thing, LinkedIn?
Yeah.
And they're making money.
Well, the Quartz story on iTunes showed the UI from 13 years ago and compared it to the UI from today. And it's like, well, identical. You know, it's like.
Interesting.
they've changed very little about the user interface. So that was kind of an interesting thing.
Speaking of iTunes, this show's now in Google Play Music.
Hey, thanks for bringing that up. So, I forgot to mention that last week. We got listed. Oh, and this week, guys, the Google Play app on my Android device updated, and I now have podcasts.
Fantastic. You can now subscribe to our show.
Good job.
Yeah. So last week, I could see it, but only in desktop. But now it's there.
Yeah, that's cool stuff. I still don't understand why it's not rolled out worldwide yet. That's a real bummer. And it's not on iOS. I actually don't care if it's not on iOS. I just want something on Android other than Stitcher. Sorry, Stitcher listeners. I think it sucks because Stitcher compresses your audio. I'm going to leave it at
Stitcher
that.
Stitcher ruins the audio. I've been using player.fm for a long time. I like that one.
Okay.
But anyway, hey, well, why don't we take a break? And then when we come back, we got some other news here, which we need to hit.
Yeah, fantastic.
Sounds great.
Hey, Rod, have you ever been guilty of plagiarism?
I hope not.
How do you know?
Wow, good question.
How would you know?
Excellent question.
What if you hired a writer and that writer was guilty of plagiarism?
You'd be in trouble.
How would you know?
Yeah.
And how much would you spend to make sure you weren't plagiarizing accidentally?
So,
nefariously.
In addition to checking your grammar and spelling, Grammarly checks for plagiarism. I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
I think that's really freaking cool.
You guys have had the tool and never used it?
I use it. It shows up on Facebook. It shows up in the WordPress portfolio. I mean, and it shows up all over the place.
You can get the browser plugin for Chrome, Safari, and Firefox. It's free.
And every field you type in, it automatically starts checking out your grammar.
Yeah,
really. You know if you have
it
problems.
It does. It gives you a little red underline. It gives you the option to check it on Grammarly or to ignore it. And if you check it, it just does a little pop-up box. And you can then ignore that or make the changes. Or it'll give you options for changes.
And it's a free plan with paid options available as well.
Yeah, so. But it also works inside of Word and Outlook. So if you're doing your email in Outlook, I don't know why you would. But if you are, you can...
Or if you're like writing things in Word docs.
Yeah.
Rod.
For people who do that still. So all you need to do is go to gtdshow.com/grammarly.
In case you have a hard time spelling.
G-R-A-M-M.
If you have issues with spelling as well.
Yeah.
A-R-L-Y. Spell the word Grammarly. Grammar. And then add the word L-Y.
Well, it's just, two letters. L-Y.
GTDshow.com.
GTDshow.com/Grammarly. And I hope it helps you.
I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but last week, Google Analytics announced that they went secure. So.
I actually did see that.
Yeah, so what this basically means is that they have now implemented HSTS, which we may have talked about before. Have we talked about HSTS on the show before?
Yes, it's basically, how do we want to say this? It's code that means that your entire website, everything loaded from there has to be secure, and it won't load anything insecure.
It's an instruction that you can issue for your domain, and it's a domain-wide instruction that basically says, if you ever see a link or any kind of URL pointing to this domain, switch to secure permanently. And this can bite you if you accidentally implement HSTS on your server before you have everything worked out.
That would be really bad.
Because your browser will permanently obey this instruction. Actually, I think there is a sunset time period on it, like a year or something. It's like a very...
So it's very, very secure if you know what you're doing. I actually haven't turned it on any of my sites. All my sites...
It's on growthedream.com. So if you've...
And it's right, which was part of the problem when we had an issue with our RSS feed. You couldn't back it out temporarily and have one URL on your site that wasn't secure.
That's correct. That is exactly correct. So we were pretty well stuck with that. But anyway, the Google Analytics has implemented HSTS. So what this means is that every time a website that you visit that has the Google Analytics code on it sees you, instead of being able to switch back and forth depending on the settings of the website, from now on, all communication between that web server and Google Analytics will be secure. So, I shouldn't say the web server because it's JavaScript. So it actually runs in the browser in reality. So when you visit a website, Google Chrome, for example, your browser says, okay, there's a user who's just been here and viewed one page or viewed two pages or whatever. And it sends all that data.
How you doing, Rob?
Well, what I'm wondering is from the user point of view, does this impact the user? So if I'm going to a website, does the HTST-BBD, does that I want to know, does this give any sort of an alert to a user, though, no, that this is secure?
No, it's nothing different than a regular security protocol. If it has the lock, if it's using secure on that particular URL, it doesn't change that. But what's the point for Google Analytics here? Because Rod's stuck on, he missed that.
Okay, so what's the point? The point is simply this is part of Google's commitment to security. So what they're saying is that this data, both, okay, so there's two sides to this coin. Part of it is the data that your browser sends to Google that tells Google you're there at that website, right? That's going to be protected. It's going to be encrypted between your browser and Google. But the flip side of this coin is that your browser actually has to download JavaScript code from the Google servers in order for all of this to work.
Right.
And that is also going to be permanently encrypted, which means that it can't be attacked. You know, a man in the middle can't inject other weird code in there, which might be an attack vector, which, you know, could result in either your data being compromised or you actually downloading malware or other.
Can I just say, I assumed that Google Analytics has always been secure, and I'm like just surprised that this is new.
It has, in the past, it has.
That should have been one of the first things they secured after securing the homepage of Google.
Yeah. What they did previously was they would obey instructions in the browser. But what this does is this actually permanently switches to secure transmission back and forth.
Well,
so it's a good move. It's part of Google's commitment to security, and I think it's another example of Google not being evil.
Which is their motto, which I think is horrible. I mean, I want them to not be evil too, but what kind of a motto is that? You go to work every day, you're like, all right, don't do something evil.
Yeah, it's a pretty low bar.
Don't do anything evil today.
Well, you know, when you think about it, it impacts any number of decisions. When you're the world's largest data collection business,
yeah.
I feel like there are a million tiny decisions that get made along the way.
I think that should be an important objective, but I certainly isn't encouraging to the team. So I'm sure they have something else, some other propaganda that they use to motivate people, other than like, you know, free housing and like food and everything at the Googleplex. Basically, you're like back in
do
college.
Do no evil.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, cool. So does that cover the news for this week?
Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we have some fascinating stories about Facebook advertising.
Let's do it. Here we are in studio. Rod, what are you working on?
Public relations. If you're not getting media coverage for your business, you're missing a huge marketing avenue. The most basic and traditional form of public relations is the press release. It's effective. It's really effective. In fact, even the most successful digital and social media experts use public relations and press releases because it works.
And we have an expert who's going to help you understand how to do it better. And I can tell you, I've used his advice. It works. He's the expert.
Right.
Make more money.
For our listeners, we've created a product that will help you start creating effective press releases right away. There are four major components to doing this. There's the hook, in which you have a hook or a news peg for your press release. There's the story, in which dullness kills. You got to write it well. And then there's two more that you have to know to make it work.
Go get your copy of this free report just for listeners of Grow the Dream Show. You can get it at gtdshow.com/PR. That's right, gtdshow.com/PR.
Do it. Do it now.
And we're back with more of episode 65. So, we've been talking about Facebook ads. We've been talking about video. We talked about promoting Brushy Bear last week and all of this sort of good stuff. But Josh, you found this story this week about this company. And I guess you know someone who did this. But basically what they did is they did a bunch of testing in specifically with the goal of busting myths around marketing.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. The buddy of mine who wrote it doesn't actually have his author information on the blog post, which is interesting. And the other thing that fascinates me is his distribution strategy. So this is one of those times where they wrote the post, wrote on their blog, and it's basically 48, was it, how many marketing, we tested 48 ads. They've changed the title a couple of times. So they must be doing some A-B testing in there, and they settle on, we tested 48 Facebook ads to bust 6 marketing myths. The bottom line is, there's some things that I think people generally just do in ads without really thinking about it. And we can go into those in a second, but they basically busted some of those during their testing. Pretty cool stuff. They're really all about like creating, doing like data research. They invest quite a bit of money in each one of their posts, and they do research and they do data. And so it's cool to talk to the guy behind it that does this. He's been a friend of mine before he started working for Sketchdeck. And this post has kind of been one that's put them on the map in the marketing community, which is really beneficial to their product. So really classic case of content marketing for their niche. But their niche
You should explain. Yeah, I mean, because they actually sell... Well, first of all, what do they sell and who do they sell it to?
Sketchdeck is basically a place you can take your like outlines, your ideas. Let's say you're making a marketing presentation or you're pitching a business idea or anything. You jot something down on paper and you need to turn it into something pretty that you can show people. Well, they take your notes and they turn it into something pretty. So,
so they're a design service.
Yeah. So you might use 99 designs for this and like piece together, a bunch of people, but this company specializes in this specifically. And so they're able to whip this stuff out at scale, that's what they specialize in. So it's pretty cool that they actually went through YC as well, which surprised me, because this is like one of those, is it a feature? Is it a full company, product? And I would have thought this is maybe just a feature, but apparently not. People are willing to really bet on this. So anyway, the guy who wrote this, I think the post really got some traction on Medium, which is interesting because I think some people say, well, Medium is for techies. And there's obviously some overlap between marketers and techies because this thing really did super well.
I think
Medium's
a lot broader than that. I see all sorts of topics. Of course, I would read Medium differently than you would, and I would follow people.
It's true, and your Twitter the people you're following is what I'm trying to say on Twitter will greatly impact what you see on on Medium when you go.
Yep. This is the critique I've just heard from others that don't for whatever reason buy into the Medium strategy. But this is one of those things where they post on their blog, they imported it into Medium. And then basically reposted the same post. And then at the bottom of the post, it says originally posted here and it points to their blog. Mm-hmm. So Google knows that that's the original source of that post. But they gained tons of traction, tons of exposure because they posted it on Medium. I have no idea if this thing would have even made half the impact it did if they hadn't.
And so I'm suspicious now, like, did they actually do some ads on Facebook to drive traffic to Medium and or their blog with this thing, which would be kind of ironic because the whole thing is about Facebook ads. So first of all, I like what you said here, Josh, because brilliant strategy. They wrote content that would be of great interest to entrepreneurs and marketers. And those are the kinds of people that they probably identified as their best buyers, right? So content that's being dangled out there is fantastic. But here's what they did. They said there are 6 well-publicized myths, and by the way, this is really smart to do, which is to test. A lot of us see these blog posts or ideas, or we read Neil Patel or a major marketing blog or whatever, and you get these sort of bullet point lists of here's what you should do to make your X great, and X in this case is Facebook ads. So they said, okay, there are 6 myths. They picked 6. The 6 were: be relevant, use text on your images particularly, because what they're really talking about is the image. The testing was all around the images in their Facebook ads. So they were driving – we should specify.
That's important, yeah.
Their ads were all link ads, and they had a very short single line of copy, and then all of their A-B testing was around what image do you pick. And so the 6 myths were: be relevant, use text on the image in this case, people versus objects – women versus men, no logos or logos, and then keep it simple. And so they basically said, we're going to test each one. For example, on Be Relevant, they said, okay, even the Facebook ad lines tell you that you need to use relevant images. So they they showed in their post here, they showed four images that they selected, which had something to do with design.
Yeah.
Like somebody hacking, you know, a design or turning something into a design. And then they picked four images, and those were the relevant ones. The four irrelevant ones were like, here's the Golden Gate Bridge. Or here's a bunch of people standing in a high rise looking out over a major metropolis. Or here's a brick wall with two color bricks. I mean, it's, you know, just...
Here's a village in South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, there were beautiful images, and I think that was part of the deal. Okay. Was that they said, okay, we picked irrelevant images, but the irrelevant images were actually really unique and beautiful.
Do you think they were stock images? Any indication?
Oh, yeah, these all look like stock images. So my question here is, number one, going into it, having, you know, gone around this a long time on studies over the decades.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
Yeah. This is called a context, Josh, is that they went into this. It sounds like, according to you guys' setup, and I just glanced through it, they went into it looking to bust myths. So,
correct.
Right from the beginning, they're going in with a bias. And
correct.
So when I look at the pictures that they chose for relevant, you could not have chose more boring, more dull pictures.
I couldn't agree with you more, Rob.
So
in that respect, same way.
Okay, so they stacked the deck on that one right there from the beginning.
Yep. So, and they chose particularly gorgeous, irrelevant images.
Right.
And so
in one, they have a visually stunning against a visually dull. Well, golly, I wonder which one's going to be more attractive.
Okay, but I do think that there's a point here that the image doesn't have to be relevant. You could do a popular picture of some like Jerry Seinfeld, for example, have a picture of him on your image, and that may be super relevant. A lot of people in your audience may watch Seinfeld, and the link could link to something completely different, and I'd be curious to see what that would test out.
So here's, right. Okay, so here's
But maybe this doesn't prove that. I don't know.
Here's what I would sort of take away from it, though. Don't force relevant if it means it's a dull picture. If the only relevant pictures that you can come up with are boring and dull, then go with something exciting and visually appealing.
Okay, so we should specify two things here. First of all, don't use Jerry Seinfeld or any other celebrity in your ad. Okay, we're not recommending that particular strategy, just for the record. Okay, so but Josh, your point is taken. I get your point. The other thing that we should point out is that the win, what they considered a win, was a lower cost per click. So, In other words, that was the final metric where they said, okay, this is more or less engaging or viral or whatever if the cost per click goes down. And so their Golden Gate Bridge photo, for example, had a 9% lower cost per click than the whole average of the experiment. And it was 16% lower than some of what they called relevant, but Rod, as you pointed out, boring ad images.
Interesting. So people have an affinity for the Golden Gate Bridge, apparently.
Yeah, well, it's certainly used a lot, so apparently so.
And hello, I mean, they're marketing to entrepreneurs.
Right, so, right.
I mean,
so you're talking the heart of entrepreneurialism, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, true. Okay.
So one of the other tests was use text on your images. So they tested the same image two ways, either with or without some text overlaid on top of it. And in one case, one of the versions was kind of logo-ish.
This is big right here.
Right. I'm looking at
Because a lot of people assume, like, well, let's put our call to action on the image too. And it's available, like there's space on this billboard. Let's add some more, you know, marketing stuff. And that's the wrong approach.
I suspect that had they used more iterations of copy on the text overlay, that they might have gotten something different. Because these are not call to action phrases. These are like brand related items. Like,
I know, but they did a really good job with like making the text look like pretty. I mean, it almost looks like the intro to like an infographic or something like that. Like they probably used a tool like Canva or something. They did a good job, I think, of putting some related text. Now, granted, it wasn't a call to action, but the point that they made on this, and I tend to agree with this, is that when people see things that look like ads in their feed, they automatically say this is an ad and they're automatically disinterested. But if you do an image without any copy, if it doesn't look like marketing, if it doesn't have a call to action, it looks like something they'd naturally see in their feed. And I think that's what we're going for.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, I'm game to see.
I think this one has more relevance than what Josh is saying there because you know, the first do no evil, you don't want to turn people off immediately to the image. And so if it looks like there's a pitch or something like that with text over the image, that might turn enough people off to where it's more damaging than helpful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you got to think this through, though. I got to tell you, because there are some terrible looking graphics that I've seen that convert so much better than gorgeous ones. So it's part of Facebook ads, though, and this is kind of an interesting point. Part of what you're doing is branding, so you really do want to think through. Like, I can get you a great result out of an ad, but it might destroy your brand in the process, and that may or may not actually be a win in the end. So
that's true too. I mean, all you're getting is the image.
Yeah. Well, let's go right to the next one, because I think that's right. That's the brand topic.
Yeah, sure. Well, the next one that I see here is, oh, by the way, what we should say is no text ads performed better. So statistically, there was no significant change in the cost per click using text or not.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the result there. The next one that they tried to bust, the myth that they tried to bust, was that people are better than products or objects.
Oh, what about don't use your logo?
Okay, well, maybe this is laid out in a different order on my screen. That
my next one was that people are better than products or
okay,
objects.
Sorry, my bad.
Okay.
Yeah. The logo comes later. So people versus objects. So in this case, they had some – actually, they're objects, quote unquote. Two of the pictures actually had, you know, humans in them. You're just not looking at faces. You're looking at, like, someone doing design work, for example. You're looking down on a pen or something. But the other items are, here's a laptop. Here's a Mac. Here's somebody, you know, clearly working at their computer, but you don't see the picture. In the other one, they're all people. With Max.
Don't get stuck on that. Move on.
Okay, all right. So what they basically said was there was limited difference. So there was a wider range of cost per click on the people. In some cases, they were lower. In some cases, they were higher.
So you kind of might have some sub-results there, really.
Well, and that's the point, is that you really would have sub-results, Rod, I think, on all of these tests. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so no conclusions made there.
Yeah, not really. But now the next myth was smiling women will beat unhappy men.
Yeah.
So they're basically saying the myth says that a smiling woman will lead to more clicks than anything.
Did they bust it?
Myth confirmed. I think that means it's not a myth. I'm not sure that's the right word.
I think if you use a happy person over an unhappy one, you're probably going to do better regardless of
gender. And I'm just going to say a pretty happy one over a dour, not so attractive, one.
Why wouldn't they just have compared smiling men versus smiling women?
Exactly.
Same
thing, Josh, because they were going into bust myths.
I'm going to call my friend out on that.
Uh-huh. Do so.
Well,
but give them credit for myth
confirmed.
The point
was to create a controversial piece of content they could share.
That's what I was going to say. Even if their methodology can be picked apart a little bit, for content marketing, it's worked exactly right for them.
Because here we are talking about it on their on this podcast, right?
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
So the final myth was don't use your logo, and they basically said that hey, if you use a logo on your ad, it's going to lead to fewer clicks, and they said confirmed kinda. So what their test results showed that if you use a smaller logo, it'll do better than a larger logo.
And like in the corner, like bottom left, bottom right, that sort of thing.
Yeah, something like that. But then the no logo set performed more consistently. So the small logo was actually the winner. There was a winner in the small logo that was far lower than the rest. But there was a range. Some of the small logo images, you know, performed more poorly than the no logo. So
well, and it looks like in this image there that they also changed up the pictures in the background of these logos in each one.
Yeah.
So it's not a straight A, B, C, D test.
My hope is that we're not seeing all of the stuff here, right? In other words,
that they hid some of it from us.
Like six images for this test, you know.
Yeah, we're obviously picking this thing apart. But I do like what this brings up, because it causes us to think through every one of the ideas we have in our head about images. Okay, the last myth. Is this the last one? Simple images?
Use ultra simple images.
Yeah, did I skip that one?
The last one, use ultra simple images.
So, okay.
So they have a set of complex images and simple images. What they found from there, well, the complex images, you just have like a busy desk. Or
yeah,
it looks
lots
like
of stuff.
A bunch of Picasso paintings or whatever, you know, busy, busy stuff. And then simple is just a pad and a pen or a simple laptop. And what they found was limited difference in results.
So two takeaways. One is, if you can find a way to run a piece of content that's going to be controversial and speaks directly to the needs and wants and interests of your target market, then by all means do it, even if you have to fudge your science.
Well, for the content marketing part of it, yes.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
That's probably the biggest takeaway from this. I think actually this article is worth a read, though, for anybody who does run Facebook ads.
No, I think it is. I really like the one on using text on images. I think that's actually, to me, that maybe is the most thoughtful of them for at least, you know, seriously looking at what you're doing and how you're doing it.
Yep. Cool.
All right.
So when we come back, we have tools.
Yeah. And you can view the show notes. We're going to link to this in the show notes if folks want to read it.
Absolutely.
Hey, Rod, you know how hard it is to find a good web hosting company? I found one about a year ago, and several of our clients have used them, and they love them.
Really? What is it?
It's a Small Orange.
Oh, I love a Small Orange.
And they're kind of homegrown, and they got something really for just about everybody.
So really, whether you need entry-level shared hosting, business class hosting with a free SSL certificate, a cloud VPS, or even dedicated or managed servers, all of these options are available to you. The Small Orange has a plan for you.
That's right. Just go to gtdshow.com/orange to sign up, and that'll let them know that, you know, you found out about them from us, and they'll support Grow the Dream Show. If you need a new hosting company, go to gtdshow.com/orange.
You won't be sorry.
Nope. Remember, gtdshow.com/orange.
And we're back with more of episode 65, Grow the Dream Show. So our favorite segment, one of our favorite segments, I don't know. They're all my favorite segments.
Most
it's
loved.
Like having children.
As I was going to say, like children. They're all your favorite children.
You would know.
Anyway, yeah, and all of yours are your favorite children, David. I know that.
One of my favorite segments is the Tools of the Week segment. So, Josh, what do you have for us this week?
You know what? I'm going to spring one on you, David. I came today without a vision for... for the
it's
tool
tool-free vision
of the week. You know, I look at so many tools. Nothing really stuck out and, you know, implanted itself in my heart this week.
Where you thought it rose to the level that we need to share this with
That's
our
right.
listeners.
But you know what? You did.
I did.
So, and I'm proud of you. I just want to say.
Thank you. That's not backhanded at all.
You finding a tool, it elevates you in my mind. And just lately, you've been up and down. You've been all over the place. So
the show, I've been up and down in your mind.
So you're on the upturn, you know?
The bromance is back.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. It's gone. It's back. It's back.
Yeah.
Hard to tell.
I've never agreed that there was a bromance. Yeah. I think that's an awkward term.
So, hey, Rod, I have a lot of tabs open all the time.
Right. I have a solution for you because I'm sure that all of us go through this, where you're working on something and you're researching, you end up with, you know, 15, 20, 30 tabs.
Tell us about the problem.
Drives us crazy, right? It slows everything down. Some people I know will open multiple different browsers in order to have...
can I not talk about my own problems? Why do you have to talk about them?
Yes. I literally have 5 browser window sessions open right now, each one with at least a dozen, some probably as many as 20 tabs.
Right. So I started this little tool, which is called OneTab. I started it quite a while ago. Started using it maybe a year and a half ago. And it is great because what it does for me and the way it's really different from creating, bookmarks and all, which we've all had the bookmark thing. And I have bookmarks too. But I found that I use OneTab almost all the time now. When I get that whole series of 30 tabs open in a window, whatever, and I say, okay, I need to save this for, you know, the next session. I'm going to reboot or whatever it is. I want to save it for down the line. But I don't need them all open right now, particularly. You have a one tab, which is a Chrome install. It's probably a plug-in for others, too. You just click the little blue one tab button, and they all just boom, 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 disappear into one tab. One tab is itself a tab in Chrome, which is what I use. And then they're all listed there. Then once you have them in the list there, you can star them, which puts them higher up on your list. You can lock them so that, because if you don't lock them, then as soon as you open them up, they disappear from one tab because they're open again. So you can do it that way and then tab them again, or you can lock them if you're going to be going back to them regularly. So a lot of the programs, a lot of websites, I should say, that I use on a regular basis are locked up at the top. I even named it called Rod Basics. I've just found this tool to be super helpful, and it keeps me from having so many windows open that you know, my speed turns to sludge.
Yeah, well, and that's part of the problem, because right now, you know, Google Chrome uses so many system resources. It chews up RAM and processor and stuff. And there are some websites that are bigger offenders at this than others. Like, they'll chew up huge amounts of RAM. So I've used OneTap for about a year now, actually. So I like it, too. It clumps your sessions together in little clumps, which you can name. And you can give them names. And
like Rod Basics, yeah.
Yeah, okay, all right. So
hopefully that has meaning to you.
Yeah.
But here's my problem with it. As with every other tab solution that I've ever tried to try to solve this problem, once I drop them into OneTab, they are gone from my memory. I don't remember they exist. I forget to look at the OneTab tab, and then I'll open it. Like, I have it open right now, and I'm looking at stuff like from 4 months ago, going, "Oh crap!"
Yeah, but see that's a problem that we all have with any piece of software, even any CRM, anything like that. It all comes down to us getting into some sort of groove of using it. And for whatever reason, OneTab really worked for me because it's in my groove. But if I want to go to, all right, I haven't had that open for a while. Oh, I was researching that issue a while back. That was a few months ago. But I know I once had. I just scroll down until I find them.
We're happy that works for you. Anybody use Pocket to like save articles to read it later?
I'm not a Pocket person. I'm aware of it, but I haven't.
What do you do with articles that you're like, oh, I want to read this later? Do you leave it open as a tab?
I do. I leave the tab open.
See, to me, an article to read is not a to-do. That's like...
You can clip it to Evernote.
Or read to later. Yeah, that would be a very similar
thing. And then I would forget about it in Evernote. That's great.
Well, but see, that's what I'm saying. So you have to have some sort of system where you're going back to things. Anyway, if anybody's interested, it's at one-tab.com. One-tab.com.
Okay, along this line, just got to throw another one in there. It's called Refind.
I thought you didn't have
it. Hold on. This gets me in. Okay, Refind is cool. If there's something you're like, I got to remember this, but I don't know when I'll need this again, but I just kind of want to have it saved. Refind is a plugin so that anything you save in Refind, if you go to Google and you type in something, anything related to that, it'll show your Refind articles in your Google search results as being like a priority article.
That's kind of handy.
Isn't that crazy? So if there's something, you're like, I might need this later on down the road, but you'll forget that you have it. Well, when you go do that Google search down the road, this plugin's going to remind you, hey, you read this article.
That's kind of useful. I like that because I even sometimes will search my Google Chrome history for something, and I find that the history search is not very effective for some reason.
Okay. So, but this sounds like it does similar to where, you know, when you've clicked on the link from Google, then it's read it out there, or, you know, it sounds like it's similar to that, really.
Yeah. I mean, okay. it's a plugin you do for any link, that sort of thing. So I don't use it for stuff.
But it's going to insert the stuff directly in your results, right?
It's going
to like particularly show them to you.
Yeah. If I'm searching for stuff about bath bombs. I just wanted to use an example other than Facebook, which was popping to my head.
What is a bath bomb, or do I want to know?
Well, at least he didn't say a bathroom bomb.
I don't know. My wife uses them. I've never actually used them. It's not a bomb. It looks like a bomb. It's a little ball.
Okay, so anyway, these are our tools
ball
of the week here.
You put in the tub, and it's like soapy and stuff, and it changes the color. Kids love it. And wives.
Oh, apparently. It's like a kids thing, or is it like some version of bubble bath? Like,
yeah. It's a bubble bath for people. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so Refind is the name of this tool. Refind.com, and if you run into an article about bath bombs that you're like, oh, I might need that later on when I'm researching bath bombs.
Fun. All right, so this week we've covered quite a bit of territory. We've got all sorts of things that we've covered, from the news to bath bombs and Facebook ads and everything in between. Fun show.
Let's do it.
Absolutely.
That's a fun show. So, hey, we hope you found something useful today. If so, or if not, we would like to hear from you. You can tweet us at GTDShow. You can send your rants and complaints directly to at Josh Muccio.
Exactly.
Oh, come on.
That's where I was going.
Which is where to find Josh on Twitter. You can find Rod on Twitter at Rod_Thompson. Remember, there's no P in Thompson.
And you can find David Johnson at the David Johnson.
Yep. And you can also send us an email. You know, we forget to mention this sometimes. You can email all of us at show@growthedream.com. And you can also leave comments. You know, that's the other thing we don't mention a lot. You can leave comments directly on our podcast episodes. And for today's episode, you can find all the show notes and you can leave a comment at growthedream.com/shows/065.
David, you coming back soon?
I will be back in town next week. That's right.
Good. We need you back.
Good. We're missing you. This was interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say brutal, but sure. Interesting.
I'm with you there.
Well, I enjoyed it, and I look forward to actually seeing you guys. And you had donuts without me, so I don't know what you're going to do next week to make up for that, but we'll have to see.
Okay. Nothing at all.
All right. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Grow the Dream Show. We invite you to subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Get connected to our growing community, add your comments, ask questions, and listen to the archives on the web at growthedream.com/show.